Good evening and welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guests are Lynn Cohen and Rich Sawney, founders of Ithaca's independent movie house, Cinemopolis, and now executive directors of Seventh Art, the nonprofit that oversees both Cinemopolis and Fall Creek Pictures. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Listen, I have known a lot of film buffs, being from L.A. myself, but I've never known anybody who's taken their passion into the realm of building movie houses. How did you guys get so interested in film? You want to begin, Lynn?
Sure. For me, I was an English major, so it's kind of a natural transition. And I lived in Manhattan the year after I graduated from college. And Manhattan in those days, in the 60s, was just a fantastic hotbed of movie theaters of all kinds, repertory and first run. Mm-hmm. And I had a friend who was a big movie buff, and he got me started looking at film more seriously. I hadn't thought of it so much as an art form. I thought of it as an entertainment, the way most people do. Mm-hmm. And so I started going to movies 4 and 5 times a week, and I got to see all the the history of cinema in movie theaters. There was no video tape recorders, certainly no DVDs at the time.
So then that's how you did it. What about you, Rich?
Well, I come from a very industrial, little horrible town in which there's nothing to do and nothing to see except what you wouldn't want to see.
Are you going to name this town, or are you afraid to?
Yeah, it's Hammond, Indiana.
Okay.
And so one of the ways I got out of living in that town was through fantasy, and there was a public television station that showed foreign films late at night. And I got hooked on that when I was like 14 or 15. Huh. And luckily my parents didn't care that I stayed up till 3 in the morning watching films. I just totally latched onto it, and
it was a great escape, huh?
It was a great escape. Still is.
Yeah, I understand that. So in the mid-70s, you guys built a one-screen movie theater in an old Dr. Pepper bottling plant in Santa Fe, New Mexico, correct?
Yes.
And then you played old movies and international films and independent films. Were there a lot of independent films in that era? Where did you find them?
That's a good question. I guess there was nothing that you would call American independent films. The independent films were from other countries.
Uh-huh.
And then we showed old American films that were studio films, I suppose, from the 20s, 30s, 40s.
Can you remember any of the independent foreign films that you were showing during that time?
Oh, sure. We showed all of Fassbinder, specifics if you want.
A lot of Australian films.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. Picket Hanging Rock.
And there was an audience for that. Was this a new thing that you were bringing into the community that people hadn't seen and were introduced to through you guys?
For some people.
I think that's true, yeah.
I was modeling the theater after the Bleecker Street Cinema in New York, which was my neighborhood cinema, which was totally repertory. But I must have had other models in mind as well, because we also showed about half new films from other countries.
Oh, wow, that's amazing. Especially during that era, because there was no Sundance and
that's true.
So how did you find these films, though? I mean, once you establish a theater, do people come to you, or do you have to go searching?
No, people don't come to you. You do go searching.
Uh-huh.
What we did, really, it's very simple. We watched what was opening in New York City. You can't play anything in a movie theater anywhere in the United States that doesn't have a license.
Uh-huh.
And so when you want a film, you have to go to the person who holds the license to rent that film.
I see.
And we cannot import films from other countries freelance.
Uh-huh.
So.
So you would see what was happening in the big city and import it to Santa Fe.
That's right. Our idea was to allow people to live in a small town and yet see the whole lineup of great films, just as if they were living in a big city, and it's what we do in Ithaca, too.
I was just going to start talking about this. So you moved to Ithaca in 1984, and you guys did a short stint as antique dealers.
We tried.
How was that?
Laughable.
Not even worth mentioning, probably. Huh?
Oh, it was just
terrible.
It was we did not enjoy that.
I sort of did, but it was so much work, and we didn't really have enough money invested.
Yeah,
we were driving back and forth to Texas with goods from New York.
Texas.
Because the prices were much higher there.
I see.
I remember Adam Pearl said to us, just don't take everything out of New York. But we didn't.
But you miss doing cinema. So you eventually started, you built Cinemopolis in, 1986?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what was the initial reception for that here in Ithaca?
Oh, it was really good, I think, yeah.
Uh-huh.
We were very successful with... We opened with Kurosawa's Ron, which had just come out.
Really?
And Room with a View was, I think, the second film we played.
Uh-huh.
We sold out every weekend for a long time.
Well, what was the cinema scene when you opened that? Were there wasn't the Trip Hammer multiplex or anything. What was here besides?
There were four theaters up at Pyramid.
Okay.
And there was the State Theater, was still showing first-run commercial.
Uh-huh.
And the Ithaca Theater had two screens, and I guess the State had two also. The Ithaca was showing first-run commercial, except they had one art film a month, maybe.
Uh-huh. So there wasn't really anybody showing what you had intended to show, like foreign films. And
top of the stairs was a little, probably illegal screening room at the in the building that's now CSMA,
mm-hmm.
I think, or next to it. And they were showing 16mm film, I think.
Yeah.
People sat in little straight chairs, and they did it once a week. They were very popular. So.
Wow, that's amazing. It feels like the olden days, but it really was not very
20,
long
not
ago.
Not even 20 years ago, yeah.
So around the same time, somebody opened Fall Creek, and you guys started competing to the detriment of both of you. And mm-hmm. tell us what happened then. They sold you the Fall Creek.
That's right. It was Fee Beaucaire. He's still our landlord. And friend, and he came to us and said, this isn't working. And we said, you're right, it's not working. And, you know, we got to do something. And we decided to buy Fall Creek.
Uh-huh.
So this is something like the fact that Ithaca has five art screens. It wasn't anything that happened by intent.
Uh-huh.
It sort of organically grew out of competition between the two of us. Because he did not start, he wanted to show repertory.
Uh-huh. And it didn't work.
Uh-huh. So he was forced into playing new foreign films, and we just were paying more and more money for them because the distributor was wise to the situation, and they would contact one of us and say, well, we have a really good offer from so-and-so.
Whether it was true or not,
they had you competing against each other. And then, so that's remarkable that you came together and actually made an agreement instead of continuing a terrible tug of war.
Yeah.
That's quite amazing.
Yeah.
Huh. And so my understanding is when Trip Hammer did open in 96, you guys started having some problems, and that's when you became a nonprofit? Or tell us the history.
We did start having problems. It is very hard in our business. I've never run another business. It's very hard to tell what is causing bad business. You can't sort it out. You uh-huh. can't do experiments. You know.
Uh-huh.
So that was our... That was our estimation, that it was a combination of chance, the kind of movies that were coming out, and the fact that the Trip Hammer was pulling off some of the best grossing films that might have otherwise been ours.
Uh-huh.
And
Go ahead, Rich.
I just can't help injecting this wonderful line from Samuel Goldberg, who said, when the American people don't want to go to the movies, you can't stop them.
That's good.
It's true.
Yeah. But you guys basically run independent and foreign films. So what was the competition with the Trip Hammer? Were you really competing for the same kind of commercial films?
Well, they picked some of them.
Ah.
They picked their crossover films. That's what they're called.
Uh-huh.
Films that can play either at a commercial theater or at an art house.
Uh-huh.
And in cities where there aren't art theaters, they do play some of these crossover films, have some grossing potential. They're not, you know, huge grocers by the mall standards,
mm-hmm.
but they're huge grocers by our standards.
Oh, yes, I can imagine.
So I remember in that period, either the Trip Hammer or the main Pyramid Theater played Shakespeare in Love. They played... I'm losing it.
I can't remember those films either.
Yeah.
Too painful.
But painful. But they were films that you could conceivably
at your
cinema as well.
Yes. Huh.
So there's no way that you guys make agreements.
No,
is it just really just a really cutthroat competition?
Yes, it's cutthroat and it's legally supposed to be.
Uh huh.
There used to be years ago in the '70s. There used to be splitting. between movie theaters, where they'd get together and say, you take the first pick, I'll take the second pick.
Oh.
And they would divide them up, and the Justice Department under Reagan decided that was not kosher, so...
It was a restraint of trade.
Yeah.
They wanted more competition. Huh?
They wanted more competition.
Well, so I'm surprised a small cinema like you guys would ever get anything then. With money probably being the bottom line.
Yeah. I think our films just don't, most of them just don't gross enough.
And so it's not worth
them.
It. That is the bottom line then.
Yeah, it is the bottom line.
For the bigger.
We're happy with some, you know, films that they wouldn't be happy with.
Oh, yeah. And people in this town expect to see certain films at your theaters. At least
true.
I do.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, why do I have to see that up there, you know?
I think it might happen that an art film would open at the mall and people wouldn't find it there.
Uh-huh.
Or they'd think maybe it's not good, or I hope. Maybe they trust us to some extent.
Yeah, I would assume so at this point.
Yeah.
So you guys have a board of directors. What is their function? And can you name some of the people that are on it? And
yes. We have Ann Shapiro, who's who works at Cornell. We've got David Schwartz, who used to be a development person at Cornell. We've got Jody Cohen, who's a professor of communications at IC. Mm. Nick Davis, who's a graduate student at Cornell in film and literature.
Mm-hmm.
And Christina Nance, who's a development person from IC, but we're in flux right now. We've got some board members leaving, and we'll need some new ones. So.
Uh-huh. And so what is their function? You guys meet, once a month because you legally
have
to?
Not that regularly. Or? No, we don't.
Oh, you don't?
We don't have to meet on a specific schedule,
uh-huh.
but we often meet every month.
Uh-huh.
And they help out. They help with fundraising. They help. They're a sounding board. They come to us with things that they think are problems, or we come to them and say, do you have suggestions for how to handle this or that?
Mm-hmm. So they're a very active board, really.
They are actually very active.
Not just to keep
board.
The nonprofit viable,
yeah.
but
no.
they're really
participating. They've done fundraising.
That's amazing. I never think of cinemas having boards of directors. And
mm-hmm.
I mean, actually, I never think of them as nonprofits, although
right.
small
it
ones probably
to
are,
be, it's
literally and
more
figuratively.
More.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
So do you guys have special criterion for what kind of films you will or will not show? Is there anything that you won't show?
We won't show anything we think is really junk, obviously.
Oh, yeah, well, that goes without saying, I would assume, yeah.
We do show NC-17. I mean, we don't have that kind of
uh-huh.
We tend to not show extremely violent films because we know our audiences don't like them.
And do you go to festivals? Where do you pick up on these
yeah,
films
we go to the,
coming?
We've been going to the Toronto Film Festival for the last 2 years.
Uh-huh.
Which is wonderful, but
I have heard that it is, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's strange. Like you can see a film there that you just think is wonderful, and everybody in an audience of 600 people are standing up applauding, and then surprise, it doesn't find a distributor, or surprise, it makes no money in New York,
or surprise, it comes to Ithaca, and nobody.
And what's the deal with that? Do you have any?
Well,
idea?
These are people that go to film festivals that are really specialized film buffs. They're really.
And so they're looking at lighting and things that maybe a normal.
And they're looking
patron
at
wouldn't.
This is the fifth film by this director I like,
uh-huh.
and you know, and we've made decisions on films that we like there and gotten burned.
Really,
yeah, just in that way. Well,
is that the only festival you go to, or do you go around the country?
No, these days that's the only one we go to.
Uh-huh.
We go to New York to see films sometimes,
uh-huh.
but we don't.
So you don't go to Cannes and.
No.
Hang out
no.
with.
I believe that's
with,
Cannes.
With Paris Hilton and.
No, we don't do that. I think I don't know. Our board would probably let us do it.
Have you ever been to Sundance?
We've never been to Sundance. We've been to Telluride.
Uh-huh.
We've been
uh-huh.
to the New York Film Festival in the past, but
I've heard it's very expensive, Sundance.
I would assume so. That whole state is, especially the ski resort areas.
Yeah.
So when you go to a festival and so you get, I'd love to know what the process is. So you get to look at a whole bunch of films
mm-hmm.
through the whatever
mm-hmm.
the weekend or however long it lasts. And then you see something you like. What do? You sign up or?
Oh, no.
How do you do it?
We have a booker in Buffalo. He's an old guy. He's in his 80s. We've never met him. We've been talking to him on the phone for 10 years. We know him, you know.
I don't want to meet him.
No. Why is that? It's like deep throat, huh?
Well, it's just, I've just got, his voice is just, he's amazing.
We love him dearly, but... We don't actually know him.
He gets into real heated conversations with studios and like
trying to make deals.
Yeah, trying to make deals. Like, well, then I'm not gonna play any of your pictures in any of my theaters anymore. Click.
Have you lost connections because of
No,
look, I'll call them back.
That's the way it works. People know.
I can't believe the frustration you must go through. He says, if I wasn't doing this, they wouldn't know I was alive.
So you see films that you like at these festivals, and you tell him.
We tell Ike, we like this. But, of course, we have to wait for it to get a distributor in the United States and to open. Uh-huh. And once it opens, then the distributor will talk to Ike. And we don't do the booking ourselves anymore just because it can be so unpleasant. And
really?
Yeah, for some reason.
Is it like wheeling and dealing?
It's wheeling and dealing, and art distributors, although they're really the same kinds of people we are and have the same tastes and come from the same backgrounds, are very suspicious and hostile to movie theaters.
Why? What do they think you're going to do?
Steal money, I suppose. I mean, it's basically, we have the same interest also, which is to promote these films.
I would assume,
There's just the suspicious and hostile and your adversarial relationship.
Oh, that surprises me. Yeah. I would think everybody would be sort of a little, like a little party where you're all heading for the same goal.
That would be nice. We've had some rapport with some distributors in the past, but not necessarily all of them.
You are listening to Out of Bounds on WEOS. I'm Tish Perlman, and my guests are Lynn Cohen and Rich Sani. Did I say it right? Sani.
Yeah.
He has a new pronunciation for his name, ladies and gentlemen, so we're just trying to figure it out. They are the executive directors of Cinemopolis and Fall Creek Pictures. You know what? Recently, there has been a lot of talk about this is Hollywood's worst year. They're not making money. People aren't coming to movies. Have you found that locally as well?
I have that impression. I think we've just gone through 4 months of very slow business.
Yes. And locally as well, they're talking about blockbusters aren't making $200 million. They're only making $150 million,
Yeah.
But locally as well, huh?
For us as independents, we've been having a very slow season. Don't know if it's related to the general picture, but also I've been reading trade papers on this supposed slump, and for some reason, the general press has taken off with this idea that there's a big slump in commercial films.
Uh-huh.
And really it doesn't pan out. If you look at it, they're talking about a couple of percentage points.
Is that all it is? And also, the ticket prices have gone up too. So they're calculating that means fewer people, even though there's bigger revenues. And
but the
I don't
ticket prices haven't gone up in the past year, apparently.
Oh, haven't they?
No. Last year there were a few outstandingly profitable films. Passion of the Christ is one, which of a type that doesn't come along every year.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So I'm reading that, in fact, that the general press has taken off with this idea and they're feeding each other information.
Yeah, it is.
But it's not necessarily
I wish
true.
They'd do the same kind of feeding about certain political issues that are going on in this country instead of the slump in Hollywood. But do you attribute any of it to the fact that a lot of people have home entertainment centers and would rather go home and just watch DVDs? And because I do a lot of both. I still love coming to the movies.
Well, I think
there's nothing
I think a lot
like
of
it.
People still come to the movies. If there's not a real slump in commercial theaters or if it's just the kind of thing that it, from year to year it varies somewhat, then I can't say it's because of people are staying home and watching movies because they've done that for decades.
Yeah, I would think
20 years.
Yeah, I mean, just VCRs started that sea change,
right.
I would assume. So there's a potential cinema complex coming to downtown Ithaca.
Mm-hmm.
What's that going to do to you guys?
Well, I think it would severely damage our business and probably put us out of business.
Really?
If Regal puts in 4 more screens, taking it up to 14, and we had trouble before when there were 14,
mm-hmm.
and then you add 8 or 10 screens downtown, and there just aren't that many films that are worth playing that will generate any kind of gross.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they're going to go after those crossover picks because why wouldn't they? And it's going to be like we're going to be caught between two titans.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine it happening any other way, can you?
No, I think we can try to be level-headed and not be too pessimistic, but I think realistically it's going to give us trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Just because the two multiplexes, Regal and the Mystery Multiplex downtown, are not going to be comfortable themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So that's too many screens for Ithaca.
Yeah, but see, a lot of people have asked me this because a lot of people do love Fall Creek and Cinemopolis, but they've said
it's a different product.
But these people would be coming just like the people at the mall and just showing commercial stuff. They won't want some of the things that Rich mm-hmm. and Lynn show.
That's true.
Is that true? But the crossovers are the things that you would worry about.
You've got it. I see.
Because people have said, you know, they're not going to show little films like you guys do.
They're not going to
Ladies
show
Ladies in Lavender, like what you're playing right now.
Right, or they're not going to show
films. Well, they might.
Yeah, because
Lavender
of Maggie Smith, because of the cast.
They won't show, you know, the Holy Girl from Argentina. They won't show
They'll show
Walk
the Passion
on Water
of Christ
from Israel.
Instead, right?
Right. But they won't show the smaller films, but we, unfortunately, can't be supported by just the smaller films.
Yeah, exactly. Is there anything you if that does happen, is there anything that you could do to compensate? Are you thinking about the future? What you might do to try to continue to keep your clientele and maybe add some extra lures?
It's a tough problem because mm-hmm. we'd love to upgrade and improve our facilities.
Mm-hmm.
But is that the kind of thing we should be doing at a time that we think we're going to be at risk?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we will come to our supporters, our customers and our donors, and let them help us out. I think a lot of people would be happy to help with certain upgrades or, even general operating expenses if they thought it was needed.
Mm-hmm.
But it's confusing for us. We're not quite mm-hmm. sure.
Yeah. It's an expensive business to run.
Oh, I can imagine.
Yeah. We can't do it on donations. It would be
mm-hmm.
unfeasible.
Mm-hmm. Is it true that people who run cinemas really make most of their money off of popcorn and drinks and snacks like we hear all the time?
Oh, you got a percentage on that once.
Because you guys have such reasonable prices. I can't imagine
they're too reasonable, probably.
Make that much money
we
off
do
of
not
it.
Make most of our money on refreshments. Flatly stated, we make most of our money on ticket sales.
Uh-huh. So. Oh, that's interesting because, you know, people are always saying,
yeah, isn't it 30% or something like that?
I don't know what it is for others. For us, it's 20%. But, Ithacans have willpower, and they don't spend mindlessly.
They do.
They really do. What do you mean? They're too in control, huh?
Yeah,
well, yeah, they
control.
Are. In Santa Fe, if the film broke, half the audience would come out and buy refreshments. In Ithaca, nobody comes out.
Yeah. I actually go to matinee, so I don't see that much snacking, but mm-hmm. I would assume it would happen in the evenings. You know, I lived in Amsterdam for a long time,
mm-hmm.
and the cinemas there are just fabulous. We used to go there, and they'd sell wine and beer, and you could actually have real meals there. And so that was an amazing lure. People were eating like pigs in Amsterdam. And we used to love to go and just get our little bottles of wine and watch films. And they always had these long intermissions, which, as an American, I was a little uptight about it, because
right.
I thought, I want to see, you know. But it's a European tradition, well, at least it's a tradition in the Netherlands.
Uh-huh.
Long intermissions, people come out and get more wine.
You mean they interrupt the screen? Of the film.
Yeah, they actually have intermissions like you do in theaters,
uh-huh.
in at plays.
Not in Paris, which is where I did some of
them. I've seen films in Paris, too. It wasn't like that when I was there either, but the Netherlands, they are. I mean,
maybe food's more important to them than
it's
cinema.
It's a party. It turns into a whole evening, too, with these long breaks. And
New York State has a law against serving alcohol in movie theaters.
Yeah, is that so? I would assume so, yeah.
In other states, they are doing it. I think in a college town, it would be a mess, actually.
Yeah, I'm not so sure it would really work in this culture. Period.
College town, it's the culture.
Yeah. Have you ever thought about, people have asked me, wouldn't it be neat if the small cinemas, you guys they're talking about, would have a little film festival, because there's so many mm-hmm. kids making films at the colleges and so mm-hmm. on. Have you ever thought about doing that?
We do. We do screen films that are made by the high school students.
Uh-huh.
That
mm-hmm.
we've been doing every year. We are thinking about having a contest for the college filmmakers, either a screenwriting contest or actually screening their films and having audience
uh-huh.
reaction. And we're going to participate in the Environmental Film Festival with Ithaca College in the fall.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Great. Any other fundraisers coming up that we can tell our listeners about? Or
nothing concrete.
Nothing is planned at the moment.
So you're just waiting to see what's going to happen?
We're We're not going to wait that long.
I mean, we've been going to the city council meetings and addressing the issue.
And I've seen you've written some letters.
Yeah.
To the papers.
And our board has also spoken up.
I would encourage my listeners to, if you really appreciate this kind of independent cinema, write letters.
Absolutely.
Write letters to the Ithaca Times.
Speak to your alderperson.
And speak to your common council members and so on, yeah.
And we have a petition we're running at both theaters now that your listeners could sign. It's just asking the city to use some caution and think about what they're doing. And we're also setting it up so that you can sign the petition on our website, which is cinemopolis.org.
Great. Were you surprised by how much Michael Moore's film brought you so much business? It was so fun standing out there.
That was incredible.
I was totally surprised.
It was horrifying.
Well, I know I know some of the people who work at your theaters, and they were just aghast.
In a good way.
Well, happily.
In a good way.
Well, it put people in, like, people that have been coming for years who are very sane. And they, I couldn't get in last night, and now you're telling me I can't get in again?
Uh-huh.
And
were people asking for special favors and coming to you?
Oh,
and,
oh my goodness.
I'm your old friend and so on.
Yeah.
Well, how about...
We're sold out. There's no seats in there. I'm going to look.
Yeah, that's a good one. Or, we're sold out. There's no seats. But I drove all the way from Corning. Could you go in and ask someone else to leave?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I went back 3 times and finally got in.
Uh-huh.
And I was going to try to ask my friends who work for you guys to give me a perk, but there's no way.
Yeah, we had to be fair about the whole thing. I think it was the whole political climate, obviously. Uh-huh.
It was fun. It was like the 60s. Lines of people, everybody was talking politics.
Right.
It really reminded me of some of the anti-war marches I used to go to in San Francisco, honestly.
Yeah.
It was very fun. It was a real cultural phenomenon.
Yeah, it was.
I'm glad we could do that.
Yeah, I was. We were so glad that it was at your theaters, yeah. It really made the difference. Yeah. What any films coming up? That are notable that people can look forward to in summer, early fall?
Howl's Moving Castle, the new Miyazaki film, is coming. The Holy Girl looks really good, the Argentinian film. This always makes me draw a blank.
Does it?
Yeah. Uh-huh. I can never think of what's
Well, the films we're playing right now, Mad Hot Ballroom, is just delightful. It's about a documentary about 12-year-old kids taking ballroom dance in the inner city. And it's just, you walk out on air. Children are so charming.
Oh, yeah. Actually, I saw the trailer for that.
Yeah.
Are you surprised by how many documentaries are actually making it and becoming almost mainstream?
That's a great new phenomenon,
yeah.
It is.
Somebody was trying to convince me that it was because of reality TV. That people wanted to have an appetite now for real things.
Well, reality TV is not really very real, from what I've heard. Documentaries seem to be more so. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, how do you explain it though? Because usually it's the kiss of death.
Yeah.
Used to be.
Even a documentary, forget it.
Yeah, because people didn't want to be people wanted to be entertained instead of educated, which people thought documentaries were going to be serious. And,
right.
You know.
Actually, March of the Penguins is something that's coming up that I'm really looking forward to. That's a documentary about penguins.
Is it animated?
No, it's not. Oh, but I understand some children, after seeing it, think it was.
Oh, great.
And they say, I really like the special effects, but there are no special effects.
That's great. Oh, no.
It's just
that
penguins are so weird.
Well, we have run out of time. Thank you both so much for joining us, and good luck with your businesses.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Out of Bounds is produced by Tim Reppert at Rep Studio in Ithaca. We are a project of the Women's Interfaith Institute in Seneca Falls. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. If you want to talk to us, you can email us at weos@hws.edu. We'll be back next week. I'm Tish Perlman.